If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 371. This is our 2025 Ryder Cup tips podcast. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's 45th Ryder Cup. Good morning, gents.
Good morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit gambleaware.org for more information. And, of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website. Paul has been in the Stats Lab. He's been pulling together this week's data. There's some real detailed Beth Page course form, player current form, and detailed Team Europe plus USA Ryder Cup point analysis by player sheets. All of our content is available completely free of charge. There is no paywall or registration required. On X, Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. We are on Blue Sky. Search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available each and every week. Please press that like button if you are listening on YouTube. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts as ever. For those of you who leave a review, I'll read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. This one is from Duncan. It's a rare one, boys. This Duncan's in Thailand. Insight, banter and profit. The Golf Betting System podcast. Five stars. The GBS podcast is the perfect accompaniment to the already excellent Golf Betting System website. Full of useful insight, a smattering of banter and good-natured chat, you can learn everything you need from the output of the GBS boys. Dare I say it, but I have been even managed to make a useful profit this year, and I'm sure I'd be nowhere near doing that without the insight and information from these guys. If you have the Golf Betting System, the Golf Betting Syndrome, I would highly recommend the Golf Betting System as the perfect antidote. Duncan in Thailand, thanks for your fantastic five-star review.
Brilliant. Thanks, Duncan. Very, very eloquent. I think that must be our first review from Thailand. I can't recall one from the past.
Has to no. be. With a bit of... But is it not? Come on.
Very good. I didn't read it perfectly. I didn't read it perfectly, Duncan. I do apologise for that. But thanks for your time. That's much appreciated. Keep them coming. We've got another one that came in over the week, so we'll read that next week. But please keep those reviews coming. I think we've got something like five or six shows left for the year, so you're more than likely to get read out. Also on Spotify, it's so easy on Spotify, so much easier. All you've got to do is press the five-star button. So if you are listening on Spotify, and we know that 50% of you are, please press the five-star button, nice and simple. Right, Ryder Cup. Let's talk quickly about last week. We had Guido, didn't we, Paul?
Mm.
Got into the final group for Sunday.
Yeah.
Had a quiet Sunday, but at least he delivered a full each-way payout.
Well, yeah, just about. He spurned... Well, at least three really good chances early on the front nine to make birdie, and it was just a bit flat, wasn't it? Three under par for the back nine, but I think he needed some of those earlier chances to drop really to give us a chance. Made a good par save on the last, to be fair, to give us a full place, and that would have been a real kick in the teeth if that hadn't happened. But kind of what we expected from the course, wasn't it? One of these kind of short, fiddly, high greens and regulation required type affairs. And in the end, the top three, they all sat inside the top eight for greens and regulation, I noted afterwards when I looked back at the stats. So I think we were kind of on the right wavelength with it. But with these new courses, there's always a lot of unknowns about how it's going to pan out.
He ate it. It was a tough finish, wasn't it? 17-18.
Yeah, yeah. To finish on a par three is a bit unusual, isn't it? And you don't see many courses like that. A lot of them are set up with a, you know, either a reachable par five or a tough par four or something with a bit of variance. But there was a bit of variance on that hole. It was a tricky par three anyway. There were plenty of big numbers on there during the course of the week. So
it's a proper testy shot, that. Like, yeah, here's a 212-yard par three with a pin tucked back right and water lurking. Like, it's I kind of liked it. It was very unique compared to what we normally see.
You wouldn't get that on the PGA Tour, would you?
I'm trying to think. There was one that ended on a par three. I forget which one it was now over in the PGA Tour, but yeah, certainly not many.
What, 110-yard par three or a 210 par three?
I'm not sure it was quite as testing as that. But yeah, Michael Kim was talking about, I mean, fair play to Kim coming over and winning that. And there was some early 33-1 about him. So I expect there were a few people who backed him, even though he missed the cut at Wentworth, because prior to that, there was a 10th at the BMW Championship. So if you're looking at players with some PGA Tour form coming into a lower grade event, then that would have ticked the box there quite largely, I think. First for strokes gained approach and second for strokes gained tee to green in that BMW Championship. So there was plenty of clues there. But yeah, Kim was talking about that 18th, and you know, he said it was a perfect 5 or 6 iron for him. But with water there, that you knew that he could just bail out a little bit and put it in the bunker. But even the bunker shot wasn't easy. He still left himself, 16, 18 feet for par that he had to make to win the tournament. So gutsy at the end. But good tournament, I think. I'll be pleased that it'll go back to Le Golf National next week. So I think as a punter, having some continuity in the venues is much more advantageous to standing a chance of actually picking the winner. But yeah,
or just familiarity. So if it went on to kind of a rota of a few courses or pseudo rota, then you start to get a feel for the ones they visited. I noticed that it was FedEx was a sponsor this year. I wonder if they just jump in for a 1 year sponsorship because it moved course, and then used to be Alstom, wasn't it? Used to sponsor it. I wonder if we'll go back to them next year if it goes back to Le Golf National, if the whole thing's tied together.
I think they had it last year, didn't they, FedEx?
Yeah, I think it was last year. Yeah, so I think that was 2 years.
Never mind me.
No, you're certainly right. Prior to that, it was Alstom. It's hopped around with a few different sponsors over the years. Whether they've got a multi-year contract on it, I don't know. But we'll see. They're clearly high profile in golf anyway, aren't they? FedEx, so they can pick and choose which of the events that they want to sponsor. I expect the European Tour, the DP World Tour ones, are a little bit cheaper to do than the PGA Tour anyway. So it makes sense if there's a gap out there for them to get involved with.
Michael Kim's had one hell of a 2025. Started the year around 155 on the world rankings. Has qualified now for the signature events next year because he made the BMW on the PGA. He's now taken out the national event of France and he's at a career high 39th in the world rankings. So we'll be teeing it up at the 2026 Masters. He'll be getting one of those invites through the post in December.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't see him falling 11 places
by the
close of November.
there's not a massive amount that can influence it between then and now with the players that we'll be playing. So I expect he's okay.
And he's into this race to Dubai, yes. He's sitting there at 35th now and he's played 6 events, which qualifies you.
Yeah.
So likely to play the US course.
He's always one of the more vocal players on social media. So it's refreshing to have that and some very honest insight from him, you know, when he plays well or when he plays badly. And he was talking yesterday on X about how he wants to be this kind of international golfer and really pleased to be playing definitely Abu Dhabi. And I'm pretty sure it would take something pretty monumental for him not to be playing in Dubai as well at the end of the end of the year. So yeah, it's going to get to see those places too. So yeah, please.
All good. It's good to see American PGA Tour players coming over here and playing European golf. We've seen plenty over the years, even the likes of Brooks Koepka, who clearly had his formative years over here before hitting the PGA Tour. So it's good to see it in reverse, PGA Tour players that have made their name over in the States coming and playing some golf over here, like Billy Horschel has and the like. So,
yep.
Fair play to Michael Kim.
Hmm.
Ryder Cup then, gentlemen. My voice is going. The 45th edition. Don't really know. I've got absolutely no structure to this. So, don't know. How do you want to play it? At the end of the day, I've made three bets. The most of the loyal listeners will know what my main bet is already. But a lot of this, I don't know. I've been spending time on the course, Bethpage Black, you know, reading media reports, trying to get a feel for how they're going to set this course up, which I think is going to be absolutely vital.
Mm.
But the trouble is, you know, you can use whatever AI you like or whatever Google searches you like. No one really knows the detail of how they're going to set this golf course up. And it was interesting because I got the greenkeeper's sheet through yesterday, emailed. And the one statistic you wanted to see, which I scrolled straight down to, was blank, amazingly. Rough length.
Yeah.
Absolutely blank. There's no information on what they're going to do. But all I've seen from these photos, in the photos and videos you've seen, that course looks particularly lush and green. It looks beautiful.
Mm.
Looks very well tended to. I've done my usual kind of due diligence. July, they had 8 inches of rain here, 203 mil. August was 2.8 inches, 80 mil. September so far, 3.7 inches, so 94 millimetres of rain. So that's 377 mils of rain coming up to 14.5 inches in the last 2.5 months, which is a lot of water. So that kind of marries up with those beautiful green fairway lines that you can see in the rough. You can see why it's so lush. Have you two managed to actually look at a forecast at all in terms of what we're expecting weather-wise? I know that it's going to be dry apart from Thursday, which I was seeing up to 70% chance of rain Thursday morning, even drizzle as they tee off on Friday.
Mm. Yeah,
and then it looks nice and clean from that point.
Not sure it's going to be that impactful from what I've seen. I watched the press conference yesterday evening with the two captains chatting. They were just sparring about as an introduction to the Ryder Cup week, I guess. And Bradley alluded to the fact that as home captain, he had the opportunity to tailor the course to how he wants it or how the team wants it. But certainly didn't give anything away other than to say that the course was, you know, and to back up your point, was looking as, you know, as
lush. Looks pristine.
As, you know, I forget the exact words they used, but he was certainly glowing about the state and the way the course was setting up. So you'd imagine that they would tailor the course in such a way that it's going to favour slightly less accurate but longer hitting would kind of be my feel. And to do that, as you said, you know, the rough length could be down, certainly in the landing areas, and that could help the American team out a little, I guess. But yeah, it remains to be seen as to whether the weather will impact that. I'm not sure. It didn't look like it was going to be massive either way, really.
I'm seeing an inch of rain on Thursday.
Yeah, I think that course is going to be nice and soft, mate. I really do.
Yeah, you know what? Actually, the it almost could be the perfect setup to give the play a ball in hand. So lift, clean, and place.
Yeah.
If the US really wanted to go extreme, they just do lift, clean, and place for the whole course. So even if they smash it in the rough, it's like, oh no, you're okay, guys. Scorecard length. Just the course looks absolutely magnificent. Like it's that just kind of Northeast American shade of green. It's like they have their own kind of unique shade of green up in that area of the world, and it's very visually appealing.
It does look great.
So yeah,
my go on, Barry.
No, it's just like you've got to give them so much credit for how well and the preparation they've put in. Like it's going to be a really cool playground to be on, and I can't even imagine what it'd be like being a player just seeing that and going, yeah, we get to do the Ryder Cup here. It's pretty cool with New York right there.
Yeah.
I saw a CBS preview overnight and they were talking about the fact that he could shorten the course in terms of tee boxes. And of course, you know, make the rough far less penal. My only thoughts on this is, just doing a bit of digging here. Clearly they played, the last time we went to play the Ryder Cup in the United States was at Whistling Straits. Now, they played the 2015 PGA Championship at Whistling Straits, you may recall, and a guy by the name of Jason Day won. His one and only major win. He won at a major championship low, I believe, which was 20 under par that week around Whistling Straits. And when you count it up, 16 players had a total around that PGA Championship, which was 10 under or better. So for a major championship golf course, it was very easy. Now, of course, Whistling Straits, they turn up with the Ryder Cup, obliterate the rough, make the course as simple as possible. You just know that birdies are going to be there and there's going to be plenty of them. Now, let's just listen to this, though. So these are the three tournaments they've played at Bethpage, and I'm not including the 2009 US Open. But we go 2012, 2016, 2019. So Nick Watney, do you remember him? Good old Nick Watney.
Player in his day.
He was. Top 10 in the world. Nick Watney. Now, bearing in mind as well that the first two tournaments I'm going to read here, Bethpage played as a par 71. So one of the holes that they're going to play as a long par four this week was a par five. Watney won at 10 under par in 2012, the Barclays. 2016, the Barclays, Patrick Reed, playoff event. He won at 9 under par on a par 71.
So that's a 6 under and a 5 under win so far. Against the current par of 70, yeah.
And we're comparing this to Jason Day winning a PGA Championship at Whistling Straits at 20 under par. Brooks Koepka won the PGA Championship here, and we met eyes on Brooks that year. It's all great. Almost gave it away to DJ, but just about held his SHIT together. Koepka won on a par 70 format at 8 under par. Now, those scores suggest to you that, okay, they can make this course easier. Yes, they can keep the rough down. Yes, they can potentially shorten tee boxes. But this course is a beast. It's not an easy golf course. And what I'm suggesting here is that they will not be able to make it anywhere near as easy as they made Whistling Straits 4 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Do you think with all the rain, Steve, just in particular relation to the rough, they'll really have to give that a good clip before they start play?
Well, that's another thing. Yeah.
This is it. Imagine that at like 3.5 well, inches, 4 inches, like with all that juice in it, it would be a nightmare.
They're not going to be able to cut it on Wednesday evening into Thursday evening into Friday, are they?
But not if it's raining that much. They're going to have to.
So they know this. They're going to have to cut it earlier in the week, if they haven't cut it already. I mean, we're on the wrong side of the Atlantic, aren't we?
Yeah, and it's all conjecture, but and it's always been renowned as a tough course. You go back to that, the 2009 US Open. Glover was 4 under, so it's single digits, and the variance between these par 71 and par 70 scores are All down to the, I think it's the par 5 7th, which they just switch between a par 5 and a par 4. It's either a 520 par 4 or 525 or whatever par 5 is. There's virtually nothing in it. So, you know, as Barry often says, it's pretty immaterial playing the same hole and the same course. So
it's just the psychology of it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And I guess from playing a playoff event in the Barclays, they don't want it to feel like a US Open and, you know, players struggling to make par. But and it's got to be pretty immaterial for match play too, isn't it? You've got players that are just playing the exact same hole and trying to beat each other on that particular hole.
It's immaterial for match play, but the advantage always goes to the Americans when the birdies are more free-flowing.
Mm. Yeah, I get that.
Mm.
So in my mind, the course, the setup and the difficulty of it plays towards the strengths of Team Europe more than it does Team USA compared to Whistling Straits 4 years ago.
Well, I noticed the overall yardage was down a little. It was from that greenkeeper's sheet that we saw yesterday. So it was around 7,350, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been playing it around about 100 yards longer, I think, in previous tournaments. So
that doesn't even tally up with what's on the Ryder Cup website. Because if you add up all the numbers on the Ryder Cup website and the flyovers, they're saying
9,400 yards.
Yeah. I think the DP World Tour have pulled this together at Wentworth, Paul.
All right. So
they're saying 7,400 yards. And then the visuals on the videos don't add up with what they're saying either. So I'm just, it's all over the place. No one knows.
I think particularly for building stands for viewing and kind of things for spectators, they've had to chew up a couple of the tee boxes or just like plant a stand on top of one of the deep long tee boxes. So that probably took that 100 yards off in little spots, Paul. And maybe just strategically might make one or two of the holes a little bit more interesting when it comes to match play style of golf versus stroke play.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get it.
Paul raises a valid point. I think they've definitely shortened the course, so they've clearly put shorter tee boxes in. Because I'm just bringing up the PGA Championship data, and it says that this played as a 7.459.70 for the PGA. So I reckon they've probably knocked about 100 yards off the course.
Yeah, and from a kind of a risk-reward perspective for match play, that makes sense. You want players to have the ability to go for the par fives, so there's some variance in that. Some of the, you know, if there's shorter par fours where you can actually be aggressive with it, then it's going to encourage that. And, of course, that kind of mentality, in theory, should lend itself slightly more to the American team. It's a tricky course anyway, as we said, because there are a lot of forced carries. So you're going to need a certain amount of length with it anyway. And you know, the greens have always notoriously been small. They're Poana-based, aren't they, I think, the greens over there?
Ben Poa.
With a little bit of bent grass in there as well. So there are certain intricacies to the course that,
Let's go through some of the details. A Tillinghast original, 36. Reece Jones got involved here pre-US Opens, 97 and 2018. He did a pre-PGA Championship renovation. Upstate golf course, classical. I classify it as technical. This is no birdie fest. Par 70. Take your pick on the length, between 7.350 and 7.4. There's only one water hazard. 76 sand bunkers. Now, the bunkering here, I mean, Barry could allude to this as well. The bunkering here is penal. Now, I'm hearing chat that some of the bunkering is kind of a little bit outdated. It can be cleared on a lot of holes by the big hitters. But there are certain holes where the bunkering really does come into effect. And the penalty for hitting a bunker is almost a shot. I'm talking fairway bunkers.
Yeah.
So it's a proper major championship golf course. Acres of fairway 30, which isn't a great deal. And checking my PGA Championship numbers 20 from 2019, some of the fairways can pinch into around about 22 yards. King Bradley's decided to make those wider, or you know, I am reading that certain fairways have actually been tightened apparently for this. The rough is a real mixture: bent, perennial rye, tall fescue. There's some poana in there. Greens. This is interesting for me. They are 6,000 square feet on average. They feature poana with bent grass. So I think, Paul, the poana is predominant over the bent.
Yeah.
As you said. Now, what they are, though, it's a fairly typical Tillinghast course. The greens tend to be, if there's any kind of nature to them, in terms of contouring, they are back to front. But a lot of them are really flat, and most of them, and think Philadelphia Cricket Club earlier in the year, chaps, which again was a Tillinghast course, a lot shorter, mind. That was the one that Sepp Straka won from our guy Shane Lowry. Most of these putting surfaces are raised.
Mm.
Quite, you know, some of them are like 45 feet from the fairway, kind of raised plateaus. Beautiful golf course, the black course, proper. I'm just trying to throw this out there. I mean, people can look at Tillinghast designs. You would look at somewhere like Ridgewood Country Club that they've played on the PGA Tour in the past. As I said, they played the Philadelphia Golf Club this year. There was also Winged Foot, of course, that our friend Bryson DeChambeau won in 2020 in the US Open, the one that was during COVID. So there's a few Tillinghast courses to look at if you want some Tillinghast form potentially for players. But I'm just trying to get a feel for what I think's important this week. Now, when you look at the visuals on the Ryder Cup website, a lot of the visuals were saying that the penalty for missing fairways here was quite tough. Now, I'm sure that they're pulling these numbers from 2019, the PGA Championship, which would have thicker rough. Yeah. But let me just run you through some of these. Number two, which is a 389-yard par four, they're saying if you miss the fairway there, it's a 0.44 missed fairway penalty. But I'm seeing numbers here. Number five, they're saying it's 0.6. At number seven, the 524-yard par four, they reckon that is one of the top 10 longest par fours in the world. And in the PGA Championship, it had lower than 50% greens in regulation number on that number seven. You see what I'm saying? You are going to get holes this week that are won with pars. That is absolutely guaranteed. It's a different dynamic, I think.
With bogeys, Steve, it's honestly...
Well, this is it. And,
it can easily happen. And it's a very different style of match play. It's going to be really cool, I think.
From the little I'm hearing, I think people are just, what they're going to do, they're going to chop the rough down. You know, a lot of this media stuff, I mean, they're going to chop the rough down. It's all going to be about making birdies. But this golf course is hard, yeah? You're still going to be going in with mid to long irons on a lot of these long par fours.
Mm.
Yeah. Right, let's keep going. So number nine, the missed fairway penalty there at the PGA was 0.7 of a shot on the par four. That's a 460. Back nine, course doesn't get any easier. Number 10, 502-yard par four. PGA Championship, that had a 44% greens in regulation number across the tournament, number 10. 44%.
Mm.
Okay. Number 11, 435-yard par four. That's, again, a half shot if you miss the fairway. Number 13, that's the last par five, 608 yards. Now, listen to this. The going for green success rate, in the PGA Championship in 2019 was 0.6%. So if you were standing there in the fairway and you went for the green that week, there was a 0.6% success rate. That's within the lowest 1% on par fives worldwide, apparently. So that just...
Sorry, 0.6%?
Yes.
Wow. Okay,
so that just screams three-shotter.
Yeah.
Because what? Why would you? Why wouldn't? Why would you actually go for the green?
Yeah.
Bearing in mind it's 608 yards, and we're talking here with all of this rain on Thursday. You're going to get limited roll on these fairways.
Mm. Yeah.
15's a par four. That's 477 yards. That, again, over a half a shot missed fairway penalty. And number 16 was a 539-yard par four. That's going to play as this week. Again, half a shot missed fairway penalties. And that is in the rough. A lot of these holes also have some quite penal sand bunkering that comes into play as well. And then you're talking, as I said, approaching a shot penalty.
Mm.
So it got me thinking here, is this really going to be a flat-out drag strip in terms of just hit, pick up the tee and go and find your ball? Or is there going to need to be a level of accuracy included as well here? We've got a lot of these fairways missed penalties, very, very extreme.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see how it's set up because, as you say, particularly with the bunkers, it's a tilling arse hallmark, isn't it, having these huge bunkers and extensive bunkers during the throughout the course. So, yeah, we'll see how that pans out. And you're talking about greens and regulation. If you go back, because we do have GIR stats, even going back to Woods at the start of the turn of the century when he won here. So Woods was first for GIR. Glover was fourth when he won in 2009. Watney was second. Reed was 13th. And, you know, as we know, that's not particularly always been Reed's MO. And Koepka, when he won in 2019, he led the field again for greens and regulation. So finding a way to manufacture a shot onto the putting surfaces from wherever you land that ball has got to be a key skill, I suspect.
Well, look at Patrick Reed winning around here. Hardly the longest.
Mm.
But what do you know about Reed? Super, super short game and putter.
Yeah, historically. He seems to have kind of reinvented himself a little bit with that in recent times. Some of the long game numbers that have been coming out have been really, really strong for Reed. But back in those days, and certainly when he won this, what, back in 2016, wasn't it?
I decided to look at this yesterday. Let's look at accuracy. Let's look at driving distance. Let's look at putting and see where the numbers fall out. So with the accuracy and the driving distance, I can include the LIV players just using some of their numbers. Clearly with the putting, I can't because they don't have that as a metric you can easily gain access to.
Mm.
So, okay. If I look at driving accuracy, the top third on the PGA Tour this year, there's four members of the USA squad in that top third and there's five members of Team Europe. If I look at accuracy bottom third, there's three members of America in the bottom three and there's two from Europe. Cam Young, Xander, JT. I mean, we know that JT can spread it. From a European perspective, Rasmus and Rory McIlroy. What these numbers do show you, just as an overall, is how close this is going to be. Yes. There's no real distinction anywhere from what I'm seeing. Driving distance top third. Well, there's five Americans and there's five Europeans. So this idea that the Americans will be able to drive us in or drive Europe into kind of surrender. Well, the top third on the stats suggests that there's five Europeans and there's five Americans within that top third for driving distance. And I'm including DeChambeau in that, Tatton and John Rahm from their numbers on LIV.
Mm.
When I look at driving distance bottom third, USA have two, Europe have three. Fleetwood, Lowry, Straka, Morikawa and Russell Henley, who can barely hit the lid off a I'd always like to get a dig in on Henley, don't I? But I genuinely think, chaps, that strokes gained putting on these greens that are renowned for being pretty flat and easy, I think that could be a really important metric. So, strokes gained putting, of course, I can't involve LIV here, but I can involve the 21 other players. Putting top third, PGA Tour this year, seven from America, six from Europe. And if you look at the bottom third, two from America, two from Europe. I tell you what I didn't realise. I didn't realise what a phenomenal year that Rory McIlroy had had with the putter this year. He sits in seventh for strokes gained putting on the PGA Tour this year.
Yeah.
Burns 1, Cam Young 5, McIlroy 7. The worst putters, and I do think this could project some weaknesses that we see this week, Lowry, Xander, Rasmus, Morikawa.
Yeah, and it often, you know, the make or break on the, to win a hole or not, will so often come down to the putts that are or aren't made. So all of it, every angle you look at it looks so tight, doesn't it? I did a similar exercise to you, Steve, but I did it with greens and regulation, and I did it across all of the tours, so it included all of the live stats as well. But to be honest, it tells a very similar story. So if you look at the top six, and this is rolling for the last 6 months across all tours, Scheffler 1, Rahm 2, so you got one each for USA and Europe. McIlroy 3, Cantlay 4, so 2-2. Ben Griffin 5, Tyrrell Hatton 6. So, you know, by the time you got there, you're still even. It's whichever way you cut it, I'm not sure any of the statistical analysis is really going to help you much, because it leads me in every angle to think this is going to be a super tight scoring affair. It's going to come down to, and perhaps to your point, it's going to come down to a putt made here or there, or you know, one errant drive that loses a match, loses a point, or loses a half, and that could be the pivotal aspects of this. Great to see if it truly is going to be this competitive. It'd be a fantastic spectacle.
What are your thoughts, Barry, in terms of course, skill sets required? Where do you think it's going to come down? I mean, it's difficult to say, isn't it? But what with the fact that Bradley can set the course up, the fact that this course is long, mid irons, accuracy seems to be a real thing off the tee. If you're missing fairways, you're in trouble. I mean, I'm reading 2.5 to 3 inches of rough, but if that's the case, I mean, they only had like 4 inches here at the PGA Championship. Does it make that much of a difference if they've shaved it down to 3 inches, just taking an inch off it?
A bit of the softness would negate that.
Yeah.
It's got to be heavy. Like, I mean, just even if they chop it down to 2 inches, it still makes it more of a task to hit tough to hit greens from distance out of rough versus fairway. So I know they've expanded some of the fairways a bit. That helps. I still think things like bogey avoidance as a stat, if you're looking at that as an average across the teams, I haven't looked at it, but just kind of popped in my head there. But again, I would imagine it's probably pretty tight between the two teams, because every other metric we've looked at so far is also tight between the teams. One thing I noticed between the two of them is that Europe has one rookie and the USA have 4 rookies. So I asked the lovely artificial machine, what, you know, give me a couple of results. Has any team won with more than 4 rookies? There's 2 it's giving me. Don't take this as verbatim. It may have failed on previous ones, but the USA won in Valhalla in 2008 with 6 rookies.
Oh, wow.
I'll name them here just for a bit of Ryder Cup nostalgia. So Anthony Kim, Ben Curtis, JB Holmes, Hunter Mahan, Steve Stricker, and Boo Weekly.
Good old Boo, yeah.
Yeah.
Remember that.
And then Europe in 2010 in Celtic Manor, we won with 6 rookies. That was Rory, Martin Kaymer, Ross Fisher, Francesco Molinari, Peter Hansen, and Dodo Molinari.
Yeah. So the rookie scenario isn't an issue.
Well,
sorry, precedence has been there that it has been won. So I might.
It's a weakness potentially, but it's not a killer from a precedence perspective. It's happened before.
I don't think it's a killer, but if you're looking for any sort of divisive or anything to kind of pick on, maybe there's something to be dug into there. But then again, the US are playing at home, so just the crowd just kind of like lift these guys up on a platform and they just feel like nothing can go wrong or go against them.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's so little. I think momentum could be the real trigger this week. You know, if you could just get a vibe going for a session and whitewash a session or get a 3.5 to 1.5, that, you know, just take advantage when the tide's going in your direction.
Mm. Yeah, potentially. I think the overall experience levels between the two teams, I mean, it's quite stark, isn't it? If you look, and some of this kind of, you can pull some of this out from the stats that are on the site. So if you look at the European team, Rory's got 7 Ryder Cups to his name up until this week. Rose 6, and then you've got the likes of Fleetwood, Rahm, Hatton with 3 each. If you go down to the USA team, then Justin Thomas is the most experienced with 3. So he's only falling into the equivalent of the third bracket in terms of the European team. You've got Cantlay, Morikawa, Xander, Scheffler, Bryson with 2 each. And then, as you said, you've got 4 rookies there as well. Griffin, Spawn, Cam Young and Russell Henley. So if you look at the relative experience, you look at the relative number of points that have been won between the teams, it's massively weighted towards Team Europe. Now, much has been talked about the fact that Luke Donald will be able to take what is, for all intents and purposes, the same team, or with a swap of the Højgaards, is exactly the same team as 2 years ago. So in terms of having this cohesion and team understanding and experience again, I think you've got to give that element to the European team. I can't cut it any other way, even if the history is telling us that historically, yeah, teams with rookies have performed well and won in the past. Just doesn't feel that way to me.
It's the experience angle is good one, Paul. It's huge difference.
Massive. Only look at the number of points that Rory's won, 18 points. Rose has won 15.5 points over the years. The best on the American team is JT with 8 points. So having that feeling, having that kind of muscle memory or the history, the memory in your mind of going out and winning these points and the elation of doing that is far more weighted towards Europeans.
It's interesting. I'm using your stats, Paul, so let's reference this for the listeners. So homepage of Golf Betting System, there's all of Paul's diligent work and it's so detailed. You can see games played, cup records, even how players have performed in singles, in fourballs, just across all the different metrics. But Justin Thomas, 8. Patrick Cantlay, 5.5. Colin Morikawa, 4.5. Xander Schauffele, 4. So that's the experienced side of the Americans. And if you said to me, you know, which one of those are playing great golf at the moment, I'd certainly point you in the direction of the fact that Morikawa and Xander aren't playing great golf and haven't played great golf pretty much all year. And that's a big experienced chunk of the team and the Team USA squad there that aren't playing great golf. Cantlay was second at the Tour Championship, wasn't he? JT's kind of playing okay. But this doesn't scream JT to me. JT now wins on little courses like Harbour Town where you can just kind of scribble your way around. This place where you've got to take driver on a lot of these holes, JT could be out in the bushes half the time.
Here's a heavy stat for experience. So total matches played by the European team is 128.
Yeah.
Total matches played by the US team is 56.
Yeah, there you go. But, again, to your point, Barry, how does that stack up when you've got home advantage and, a vociferous New York crowd, momentum from that side? It's every aspect, every angle you look at here, you think you can counter one argument with another. And
yeah,
you know, I don't like to sit on the fence with a golf tournament. I like to take a view on it, but this seems seriously tight to me.
Steve would say I wouldn't touch it with yours. I don't think I'm going to place a bet on this. I just don't. What I might do is just put like an ACCA on the matches for each session.
Well, but this is just the point, isn't it? There's so many different ways to play it. Because you know, it's not just about the headline USA versus Europe or draw, which you could go for. There's point scorer markets for either individual or for overall. There's wild card markets. There's foursomes or four ball markets. And you know, plenty of punters will just get stuck into the actual matches. As you say, it's, you know, on a day by day basis or a session by session basis. You've got four matches to try and pick out a four ball or a foursome accumulator there. So yeah, it's each to their own, I think, with this particular one. It's to be honest, I'm kind of with you to a certain degree. There are some bets that I do fancy, which we'll talk about as we get towards the end of this. But yeah, it isn't the biggest of betting events pre-event for me. Much more about just taking a view as we're going along and having a bit of fun with the individual sessions and then with the singles on Sunday as well.
As loyal listeners will know, I backed Europe ages ago. The price has drifted on Betfair Exchange, by the way. It's drifted about a quarter of a point from when I placed the bet. Now, that doesn't overly make sense about the other players that I'm about to say I've backed as well, but I don't know. In a way, when they first brought up the prices yesterday for top overall point scorer, my eye instantly caught 6-1 Scottie Scheffler, top point scorer. So I backed that. In a world where we've been getting 2-1 at the Pro Core, yeah, I know the field was terrible. And was it 5-2 at the BMW?
Yeah,
6-1 seemed like a spot of value to me, so I thought, well, if Scotty's literally going to clear up 5 points, I wouldn't mind being on Scotty at 6-1. So I had a squeaky little bet on that. So I've gone 6-1. I think it was with Bet365.
You crushed the market.
Oh no! I tell you what, it was actually with Ladbrokes. I had that bet.
Well, like, if you're looking at informed players, and you can't go past Scheffler, he's won three of his last five, I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
But to win the top point scorer market, I'm not trying to besmirch your bet there, because you know, again, each to their own, and you choose whichever angle you think is the most appropriate. To win, what, you're going to need 4 points probably or more to win that in the overall. So you're probably going to need 5 out of 5 starts. And historically, it's been very few players who have actually started every session. You go back to 2021, Hovland and Rahm for the European team. DJ was the only one who started 5 matches in 2021. Last time out, Max Homer was the only player in Team USA who played 5 matches out of 5.
And he was joint top point scorer.
Yeah, he was.
With Tyrrell Hatton and Victor Hovland. Played 5, Hatton played 4.
I think Hovland, Homer got 3.5, didn't he? I think McIlroy got 4 points last time. Anyway,
McIlroy 4, sorry. Yeah, so he was top American Homer at 3.5, yeah.
Yeah, you'd imagine that Scotty and Rory probably do get 5.
Yeah.
But you know, who knows? You know, if it doesn't quite go right in the first or second session, perhaps they do swap things about a little bit. And they certainly did last time, because Scheffler got 2 halves and 2 losses from his 4 matches. So 1 point out of 4 for a player that you would have expected to be one of their real, you know, the part of the spine of their team. So Yeah, I don't know. I'm struggling in that market to get, you know, particularly towards the top of it. If the only player that kind of nags me is being one potentially to get behind might be Tyrrell Hatton. But yeah, I've got some different markets for Hatton, which I'll run through in a little bit.
Accuracy top third, Scheffler 42nd. Driving distance top third, Scheffler 49th. Putting top third, Scheffler 18th. He's the only player I can find across all of those categories that actually sits in the top third of everything, which won't exactly surprise you because, as we know, Scottie Scheffler doesn't tend to have much of a weakness except the putter. And even that hasn't been a weakness this year. Mm. But yeah, I took the 6-1. The other one I've had in that market, and then I literally shut up because that's all my bets. I managed to squeak 25-1 on Cam Young, who, if we're going to go down the narrative of bomber and the narrative of great putter, Cam Young sits, where is he? 23rd for driving distance, top third. He's also 5th for strokes gained putting on the PGA Tour this year. New York lad, won an amateur event here on this golf course back in 2017. He won the Metropolitan PGA's New York State Open, where he beat a very well-named guy called Chris DeForest in a playoff. He actually held Young 64, 7 under par, was actually the course record here until Brooks Koepka shot 63 in the first round in the 2019 PGA Championship. He also won the Westchester Open, which again is another high amateur New York golf tournament in 2018. I think it'll be kill or cure for Young, because clearly the local man, he's going to have a lot of support behind him. I think he's either going to fly this week and be a real strength for the Americans, or it will go completely the other way and he'll go into his shell. But one thing you cannot say about Cam Young is that he isn't playing great golf. Because if I look at my strokes gained analysis over the last 8 tournaments leading in, surprise, surprise, Scottie Scheffler ranks number 1 in the field or in the teams. Number 2 is Cam Young. Second best form of all these players heading into the Ryder Cup. So I thought 25-1, worth a punt. So yeah, that's me done. 6-1 Scheffler, top point scorer. 25-1 Cam Young, top point scorer. Be careful in those markets as well, because some of our UK operators are going 4 1/5 on the each way place. There's quite a few out there like Betfred, Ladbrokes, Coral and Boyle Sports, who are the old 4 places and 1/4 the odds on the place. So just bear that in mind. Shop around. You've got those skinning you at 20%, and there's some bookmakers out there giving you a full 25% on your each way part. So just check your terms and conditions before you place any each way bets in these in that top overall point scorer market. Right, I'm done. I can be quiet now. Over to you two. Whatever bets that you're thinking of or have had.
Yeah, there's some really interesting markets out there, and you can really dig deep into them to try and pick a few prices out. I guess the difference between this and a regular event is there's very few markets out there where you can get a, you know, what you'd class as a regular golf odds type situation. So, you know, there's very few markets where you get in 33s and 50s and whatever, unless you're looking at the combined top point scorer market, and then you're having to dig quite deep into that. So generally you're going for markets where the prices are much skinnier, but you can be really quite selective about it. I thought it was interesting that a lot of the bookies are pricing the players who they think are going to go out first in the singles. Rory's the favourite for that from Team Europe, and Scheffler's the favourite from Team USA. Now, I'm not going to bet on that market because that is pure conjecture as to what the two respective team captains choose to do. But that would just be absolute box office, wouldn't it, if we got Rory versus Scheffler as the lead game going out on Sunday.
I think I had a look at this time. A couple of weeks ago, and I'm sure Rory had gone out. Don't quote me on this, but it was something along the lines. Last four Ryder Cups, he's gone out number one on three of them, and John Rahm was the other one.
Yeah, Rahm last time, I think. Yeah. And
I think Rory was third off that particular one. That was the last time out in France, in Paris, yeah?
Yeah, in Italy, yeah. I think it was Rahm versus Scheffler last time, and didn't they halve it, I think, from memory? It would suggest that the market thinks that it's going to be Rory versus Scheffler at the top. And
I mean, I prefer Rory Bryson. I think there's more. I think there's more energy in that.
Yeah, more energy. I could see Bryson putting his hand up and saying, "Yeah, I want number one."
Yeah,
he could have an amazing week this week. Don't forget, I said earlier in the podcast, he won the US Open on a Tillinghast golf course at Wingfoot. His record on Tillinghast golf courses, he also won, I believe, at Ridgewood, which would have been the old Barclays tournament when it used to be a four-legged playoffs on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, yeah.
This is where Bryson plays his best golf, upstate, old-style golf courses. I just didn't see much juice in his price top point score. I'm seeing 11s and 10s, a little bit of 12 to 1.
Yeah. Yeah, and that much depends how Scheffler does, doesn't it? If Scheffler goes and plays 5 and wins 4 points, then there's very little wiggle room for someone to beat him in that market.
Who would be Bryson's natural partner to you, Barry?
That is a great question.
Because I can't tell you the answer.
Yeah. I wonder if you need somebody who's like a little bit more... less emotional roller coastery than Bryson. So you want somebody kind of chill. Like, I wonder if like Harris English and Bryson could be a weird combo that could balance each other out.
Yeah, interesting. Because clearly he didn't play in the last one in Rome.
So no, I was just looking
back. We're having to go back, aren't we?
He played both matches first time round in 2021, rather, with Scotty Scheffler.
Oh, wow.
It's almost like process of elimination. So who could I see him play with? JT, yes. Cantlay, no. Morikawa, no. Schofield, no. Scheffler would be fine, I think. Sam Burns... Yeah, English, yeah. Griffin, I think, is too emotionally charged a player, so that would be a no. JJ Spawn, I could see that.
Yeah, he's chill.
Cam Young's generally quite chill, but, you know, put that in the maybe pile because he might get too amped because of the crowd. And Russell Henley is chill enough, but I just don't know it doesn't feel like that's a personality match. So there's not a huge amount of options, but... there's enough there to be able to chop and change him. He's such a good player. You just got to find somebody who could, you know, gel with him on the course when you put your tee in the ground.
Yeah, interesting. He got 2.5 points from three last time, and 1.5 points of the two were when he was playing alongside. Scotty Scheffler. Sorry, I keep saying last time. This was 2021, so the last time.
Whistling Straits, yeah.
Yeah. So, potentially a pairing there. Maybe.
That would be... Can you imagine Scheffler, DeChambeau versus, like, Rory and Rahm?
Just
like, if the captains aren't colluding to make things like this happen, like, we're doing the Ryder Cup wrong.
Yeah. That's it. There are some incredible potential matchups, aren't there? Interesting. I look back at 2023 because we have got this continuity between the team, Europe, and the way that Luke Donald can play it. So in the foursomes last time, he played exactly the same foursomes both on Friday and Saturday. So that was Rahm, Hatton, Oberg, Hovland, Lowry, Straka, McIlroy, Fleetwood. So that was the same pairings for the foursomes. They won 4-0 in the on the Friday session, and on Saturday they won 3-1. So with Luke having the option to pretty much repeat whatever worked from last time and what didn't work, and you know, resign that to the dustbin, does he use this the history, does he use the fact that the teams or the pairs have worked in the past? If he can walk out of the foursomes 7-1 from 2 years ago, yes, it's an away Ryder Cup, but if he can use any of that to his advantage this time around, then does he stick with the same pairings? I wouldn't be remotely surprised to see it absolutely identical, particularly for the first foursomes. Now, you can bet on overall foursomes result, USA versus Team Europe. And Europe are the underdogs in that market, despite the fact they won the foursome 7-1 2 years ago. So you're getting 11-1. You get Europe 11-8. You're getting USA just the wrong side of odds on. So for me, that pricing is incorrect. It should be the other way around. I think the team continuity, the fact that Donald can choose to just rinse and repeat what he knows has worked in the past. I think, yeah, foursomes is the format that's going to lend itself most to kind of team cohesion, I think, because you're playing the same ball. You need to be comfortable with your partner. You need to understand the complexities of the way that they work, the way that they play, and to have a blueprint that has worked so well just 2 years ago. Yeah, that market feels wrong to me. So yeah, the bet I've had there is Europe 11-8 to win the foursomes overall, because I think that's got to be taken. The only other market I've been looking at is one to try and slot Tyrrell Hatton in. He won 3.5 and 4 last time. As I just said, he was paired with John Rahm in the foursomes, so they won 2 out of 2 points there. Hatton, for top live player, which is available with a few markets, he's the outsider of 3 at 11-4. I think that's a prize worth taking.
That's a good bet,
He's also 13-5 to be the top English player. So you got Fleetwood as the favourite. You got Matt Fitzpatrick and Justin Rose. Now, I suspect Fitz and Rose will play maybe 3 games, do you think? Maybe something like that. I suspect Hatton probably plays more than those guys. I suspect he plays an equivalent amount to Tommy Fleetwood. It'll be a straight fight, in my mind, between Fleetwood and Hatton for that. But he is the outsider of those two. So again, I think there's just a little bit of juice in Tyrrell Hatton to be top English at around 13-5. But yeah, that foursomes bet, that really did capture my imagination. So
I can see why.
We'll see if it comes true.
What did you think of Bradley choosing to go with foursomes first?
Yeah, he had the option, didn't he? And given the history from last time, I thought that was a bold statement, because it could go horribly wrong. You know, if Europe come out and, as I've just, you know, alluded to, if they win the first session, even 3-1 or 2.5, 1.5, it just, the momentum in this format is huge. So, yeah, the flip side of looking at that is, well, okay, if it's 2-2 after the first session and the American team feel that they've got the upper hand in the four ball, then they could ultimately walk away with a slight lead from the first day. But
hit their straps in the afternoon with the kind of slightly liquid-fueled American crowd on their backs. Like, they could, yeah, they could really have a heavy afternoon session.
Yeah. It's all psychology, isn't it? You know, do you want that quick start, or do you want to make a, you know, use the momentum and the use, you know, anything you can drag from the crowd to drag you through that first session, you know, close to parity, and then go and push forward after that.
Kind of like Stephen Wentworth. I don't think the time of the day is going to prevent a few beers being sunk early in the morning. So.
Oh, really? Are you going for the it's 5 o'clock somewhere around the planet kind of strategy?
I think I'd say a lot of the fans will be, Steve. Yeah. You're at the Ryder Cup, you're on holidays. Like,
We're over an hour on the pod. Any bets from you, Barry, before we close this one down?
So I like what you guys have done. I don't love short prices on anything really. So I always enjoy betting on matches, kind of just a little accumulator. So I think that's where I'm going to.
You're sticking with that.
To have a bit of gambling fun on this, but I certainly won't be gambling on the overall result. It's too tight. May as well just stand there and flip a coin. As far as I'm concerned, right now, it could all be head smackingly obvious to us once we see things flowing how they flow come Friday or Saturday, and we're there thinking, oh my god, how did we miss that? Which could very easily happen. So I'm just not going to touch the overall. I think I like gambling on the matches. Your point score bets are interesting. I was maybe tempted on I didn't mind that price on Bryson for the overall point score. Steve, I figure he's going to play at least four.
He's going to be their talisman with Scotty, isn't he? It's interesting. I'm scouring through DeChambeau's Ryder Cup record, and as Paul mentioned, he's only played two. But this is the kind of he played as a rookie, back in 2018. Played as a rookie at Le Golf National. I mean, if you want a golf course that doesn't suit Bryson DeChambeau, Le Golf National's there. But you listen to what he played afternoon foursomes with Mickelson, and then he played afternoon foursomes on the Saturday with Tiger Woods. He's not a normal golfer, is he, DeChambeau? He's always been one of these guys that's on a pedestal. Your first ever Ryder Cup and you get paired with Mickelson and Woods, it just doesn't tend to happen to normal kind of players. And then, as Paul said, he played with Scheffler in Rome. I'm scouring. Scheffler again. And then, of course, he won his singles with against Garcia, 3-2. I don't think DeChambeau's a bad bet, actually. Top point scorer. Because you just know the New York crowd. If literally America catch fire and it's just a whitewash, or a stripe wash, DeChambeau's just going to absolutely love it. And that golf course does suit him.
I was amazed, actually.
Yeah. Going back to the accuracy numbers, DeChambeau, if you take his driving accuracy from LIV, and I know you can't compare the two, but let's do it, he actually was in the top third for driving accuracy.
That's serious with the distance he has.
Serious distance, and it's pretty straight. He could take this course apart.
I was just saying, I wonder if they keep DeChambeau and Scheffler apart. Like, DeChambeau was one of the stars of the team.
I think so.
Back then, when they were putting him with Mickelson and Tiger, I think like DeChambeau's psychology says like he needs to feel like he's the top dog or the big part of the pairing. Before, when he played with Scheffler, he wasn't, but he is now. And I wonder if they need to let him stand alone rather than putting these two stars together. And they might cancel each other out a bit. I think
you'd split them, wouldn't you? So you've got the two stars in two different teams. Yeah.
And then they bring somebody else along in their wake. They lead the charge for the team or their respective team. I can see the temptation to put them together, but then could they do more damage separately just with somebody else in tow on each of their teams? I still think he plays at least four. Which makes that
I'd be amazed if we're sitting doing the podcast next Tuesday saying, oh, I'm amazed Bryson DeChambeau only played three games like he has done in the previous two. I can't see that.
You'd expect four.
You might have persuaded me into actually backing him at 12-1 with Ladbrokes.
Well, it's just you were so against it, I thought I needed to pick at it a bit, and now I've kind of talked myself.
Not against the bet, but against the price.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
What did you think, or what did you fancy as a price?
Well, probably a price that I wouldn't get, closer to 16s. But there's 12. There's 12s floating out there with Ladbrokes and Coral at the moment, top point score. Mm. Which is exactly the same price you'd get for Tommy Fleetwood or Xander. I mean, I put it this way. If you said to me, Steve, would you take DeChambeau at 12-1 point scorer or Xander? It's not even a question. I'd just, you know, auto-bet DeChambeau.
If you want somebody up at that higher, a little bit above 16s, you can get 20s on Russell Henley. He's playing excellent golf. He's an unbelievable putter, which could be a big, like you pointed out, could be a big advantage this week.
Mm-hmm.
But does he, I guess the question is, does he play four? And he might have to because of reasons. There's four rookies there in the team. He is a rookie. Does a rookie play four?
Yeah, I'm not convinced. Three, maybe.
Yeah. And so that kind of makes that price useless, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think you need to be playing four plus to stand a chance of getting the top overall.
So what do you reckon? Rory plays
five.
Both. You think he plays all five?
Yeah.
Or I does think he play? Probably does, yeah.
He'll demand that he plays all five.
Yeah. The only way you just give him a rest is the Saturday morning foursomes. If Europe are, let's say, 5.5 to 2.5 up on day one, do you just give him a rest to keep the energy there for the afternoon and the singles?
Yeah, or do you keep the foursomes together again, as he did last time, and just mix it up in the four ball in the afternoon?
We're going to have to close this down, chaps. We could be talking for another 3 hours.
Yeah.
I think this event's great because you often get more questions than answers. And we'll only find out when it starts unrolling. And you'll be there with your gin and tonic, Barry, at 9 watching the first tee off.
I'm flying back. I'm going to miss a bit of the I might what? See some of the first. No, I'm going to see what? Yeah. there's if anybody had like noises from Steve Bingo, there's a new one. I'm going to Munich on Thursday for a night of Oktoberfest. So I'll see some on Friday before I fly back, but I am flying back at like 5 o'clock. So it's a bit of a weird one, but I couldn't resist.
With a tremendous hangover.
I've never been to Oktoberfest.
You'll have a tremendous hangover.
I've never had more fear of a flight in my entire life, and I haven't even gotten there.
If you want the most ultimate factory farming for a kind of drink session, Oktoberfest is fantastic. Unbelievable, mate. You'll have the time of your life.
Yeah, enjoy that, Barry.
Enjoy that. I'm very jealous on that one.
I know you are. Yeah. I'll catch a bit before I can fly back. I'll just I'll lose a bit of the late morning session on the way back, but not the end of the world. I think it's worth the juice. It's worth the squeeze.
Well, enjoy the Ryder Cup, and listeners, enjoy the Ryder Cup. We're going to be back next week. It's all going to be a bit of a after Lord Mayor show kind of thing. I've got the Sanderson Farms Championship. Woohoo!
Wow.
Woohoo! What have you got, Paul?
It's the Dunhill Links next week, so it's a good. There's some good players coming across.
There'll be a few private jets going straight up to St Andrews.
Yeah. There's Fleetwood and Fitzpatrick are playing, Hatton and Bob. So yeah, there's a forwarded team that are penciled in to play next week. So should be good.
We'll see you again next week. Cheerio.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.